there, still on her Wi-Fi connection. I was waiting for her to come back out and say something. Just waiting. She never did, though. I finished my upload and we were on our way again. After our hike back up the mountains, we were pleased to see that Corey had finished all the laundry during our little internet adventure. We told him the bad news about the thrift store, and then we decided to spend a couple more nights camped on the ridge before trying to hitchhike for the first time. That night, an attempt was made at fighting off the cold. Corey and I devised a wind block out of his rainfly, while Aaron opted to sleep on the ground and set up a little shelter out of sticks and rocks. I was somewhat warmer than the first night, but later in the trip I would learn that Aaron had the smarter of the two ideas. It was the cold air underneath the hammocks that kept us freezing our asses off. When it was finally time to leave our little mountainside campsite in Mantra some days later, there was one more incident which I'm inclined to share, along with a couple of noteworthy discoveries. The first discovery was that the famous Mantra Jazz Festival was happening that very weekend, which we were told was the cause of some of the hostility we were encountering from a few of the locals. The second, more important, and life-changing discovery was Nutella. Corey and I had never tried it before. As mentioned before at Placa de Nudista, peanut butter is a rarity in Europe. So we figured we'd give it a shot. The first time the sweet chocolate goodness touched my tongue, I realized I had spent my entire life in a dull, tasteless cave. Sweet God, what is this magical nectar of princes and kings? Corey and I ranted of its wonderful taste and texture incessantly. Aaron was much less enthused than we were. It was too sweet for his palate, although he ate it anyways because money was tight and it was cheap stuff. A Nutella sandwich. Who knew such a morale boost could come from something so simple? My first experience with the cocoa spread was noted in my journal with the simple words, "Fucking Nutella." Cold nights and angry French women aside, we enjoyed our short stay in Mantra. The view never got old, and it was nice to relax for a few days and hike around the surrounding area a bit. The prospect of hitchhiking had us all a little anxious, but I think everyone was ready to start moving onwards, to find whatever new adventure was waiting for us. Besides, we didn't have much choice in the matter given how little money we could afford to spend. End of chapter 7. Chapter 8. Riding in cars with Swiss drug dealers. Mantra and Biel, Switzerland. I don't want to worry my parents, but if anything happens, we're in Solothurn, Switzerland, and on our way to Biel. We are in kind of a sketchy situation. We're with a guy from the Dominican Republic named Wilson. If you don't hear from me tomorrow, tell my parents we're in trouble and need them to call the embassy. I will explain more when I can. Much love from your three idiot friends overseas. Message to a friend on July 13th, 2013. July 12th. We had talked to some officials back in Geneva about the Swiss laws regarding hitchhiking. The verdict was something like, technically it's illegal to hitchhike in Switzerland, but nobody cares. One woman who worked in the Mantra thrift store we had bought clothes from had implied that we would probably be kidnapped or killed. We hear all the time of people who go to hitchhike and never come back. A bad person could pick you up and drive you into the mountains and kill you there. Thanks? Undeterred, we set out on the afternoon of July 12th to give it a shot. We didn't have much of a choice, really. We had done some calculating regarding our budget and discovered that we'd spent almost $2,000 already. We'd had around $4,000 total when we'd left. In other words, we'd somehow managed to spend 50% of our 10-month budget in just 2 weeks. This was why we had camped in the woods in Mantra. Most of our money had been spent on transportation. All those trains had cost upwards of $1,000 alone, but a decent portion had been spent on hotels and hostels. And most of it had been spent during our first week overseas, where we'd been blowing money on partying. Two things needed to happen desperately. One, I needed to completely redesign the website and hopefully start making some money from donations or advertising. I had come to realize, after the euphoria of finishing it had worn off, that the site looked like complete shit. Two, we needed to start contacting couchsurfing hosts ahead of time to set up places to stay for free. If you're not familiar with couchsurfing.org, I'll explain. It's basically a website in which travelers can contact hosts within a city who will let them crash for free. Everyone has a profile which lets potential hosts and guests leave reviews and comments for a little peace of mind. But other than that, it's no strings attached, free accommodation. Just what we needed. This is where Aaron and I began disagreeing once again. In order to refresh the website, I wanted to find a place with Wi-Fi and spend a few days working and trying to contact potential couchsurfing hosts in our next destination, Germany. All Aaron could see was the extraordinary amount of money we had already blown, so he wanted to keep a close watch on the purse strings. He just didn't have any faith in artists abroad's ability to make money, so he couldn't justify sacrificing funds up front to give it a go. We bickered about this a few times in Mantra. One thing we all agreed upon, however, was that we weren't going to be able to take any more expensive trains. We had to hitchhike. So that brought us to an on-ramp just to the north of Mantra, after we had jumped on a bus that took us out of town. We didn't pay for the bus. We saw people getting on board without interacting with the driver in any way, so we simply hopped on board and then hopped off when it stopped just outside of town. Aaron hadn't wanted to take the bus. As always, he wanted to hike up. Now, remember the town's geographically steep location. He figured that the bus would end up costing money, but it was two against one and we were all pretty happy with the outcome. Anyway, there we were on the side of the road under this on-ramp. Dennis, one of the German guys from the hostel in Barcelona, had given us some hitchhiking advice. He told us to stand next to or just before an on-ramp rather than the side of the busy highway, and instructed us to make a sign with the name of the town or direction we were heading written on it. Also, he said, you must smile all the time. So that's what we did. I got out my guitar and started to play while Corey danced around with the sign. Aaron waved at the passing motorists, and all three of us wore huge, cheesy grins. We received some promising feedback almost immediately. People were honking and waving as they passed, most smiling and some even laughing. We had been standing there no longer than 15 minutes when a little black Audi hatchback cut two lanes over and bounced up on the curb next to us. We looked at one another for a moment in confusion. "He's giving us a ride," Aaron exclaimed. I threw my guitar back into its padded case and shouldered my pack. We all ran over to the car as a short and stocky black man stepped out. He gestured towards the back hatch, motioning for us to place our bags inside. We quickly did so as traffic was switching lanes and swerving around the stranger's little car that we were about to pile into. We had decided ahead of time that we would rotate seating arrangements, so I volunteered to ride shotgun for the first ride. Aaron and Corey would sit in the back, both of them having their knives close at hand just in case one of our drivers turned out to be a psychopath or something. I hopped into the passenger seat. "Hi," I said to the driver, who was now flashing a big smile as he quickly put the car into drive and pulled back out onto the road. "Hola," he replied. Spanish. That's weird. "Wilson," he said while pointing at himself. We introduced ourselves in return. "Parlez-vous anglais?" I asked in French for some reason, even though he had first spoken Spanish. "No, no anglais." "Well, this is going to be interesting." "Me parle Spanish, French, German, Italiano, no inglés," he clarified. "Wow, I don't know parlay any of those," I stammered out. He laughed. "Where you?" "Where am I going?" I pointed towards the road with an inquisitive look. "No, no, I am Dominican Republic," he pointed to himself. "You?" "Ah, we're from America, USA." "Oh, no, no, Wilson!" He laughed and sunk his face in his hand as he shook his head. He threw up his hands in joking frustration at himself and laughed. Corey chimed in from the back. "We're not stereotypical Americans." We somehow managed to communicate as he drove and discovered he had moved to Switzerland some years ago, leaving behind his wife and daughter, whom he regularly sent money home to. I conveyed to him through charades that we were traveling the world, playing music and taking pictures. He seemed pretty excited by that, specifically the music part, and told us that he played drums. It's important for the listener to know that I'll be taking some liberty with dialogue between Wilson, Corey, Aaron, and me. In other words, he'll be speaking better English here than he did when we were with him. Our communication was almost completely through charades and repeated guessing of words, etc. To convey the sheer determination it took for us to communicate with one another would be tiresome and draw attention away from the story at hand. Just know that it was very, very hard for Wilson and the rest of us to talk to each other throughout our short time together. The only phrase he seemed to know how to say exceptionally well in English was "all good," which he used incessantly. Before too long, I looked over my shoulder to see Aaron and Corey sound asleep. You have got to be fucking kidding me. I started to worry that if something sketchy happened, I would have no way of warning them. Wilson seemed nice enough, but there was an added feeling of uneasiness on top of the normal wariness of entering a stranger's car in a foreign country when such a large language barrier exists. In between our charade conversations, there were some seriously long and awkward silences. Nonetheless, I had pushed negative thoughts to the back of my mind and instead spent those silent moments staring out the window. To say Switzerland is beautiful would be a colossal understatement. It was the most breathtaking landscape I had seen on our trip thus far. Green rolling hills gave way to huge snow and ice-capped mountains. Little cottages were littered across the hillsides, with country roads winding through the fields. Shit, even the road signs were aesthetically appealing. One of these gazes was interrupted by Wilson. "You douche?" "Excuse me, asshole?" "Huh? You want douche?" he repeated as he hovered a hand over his head and then imaginarily scrubbed at his body. "Oh, a shower?" He nodded. "A shower sounded amazing." He spoke again. "I get euro? You my house? You douche? Eat, and you sleep." All of those things sounded awesome. We hadn't showered since the very first day in France at the hotel in Serbière. The second hotel had been too disgusting to even attempt it. He wanted us to pay him, though? "You get money, dinero. We go to your house?" I asked for clarification. "Si, you eat, sleep, all good, eh?" "How much? How many euros?" He looked confused, so I repeated myself. "How much do we pay you?" He was taken aback at the question. "No, no, you no pay. I do for you." He laughed and held back his hand to feign a smack at me. "Pay? No." I was befuddled. I was sure he had just said something about getting money first. "Sure, well, that sounds great." I woke up Corey and Aaron and filled them in on what was happening. Everyone was on board for free showers and a good meal. Shortly afterwards, Wilson took an exit ramp into a somewhat rural area. We'd been driving a little over an hour, which had brought us somewhere near Biel, about 95 kilometers or 60 miles south of the German border. After several curvy roads through the Swiss countryside, we pulled onto a suburban-esque street along a row of houses. Wilson pulled into a parking spot next to another car. He waved at the car, and two guys stepped out of it. He got out and motioned back at us. "Here, come, come. All good, all good." We got out as he greeted the two men from the other car. He gestured for us to get our backpacks, which we did, and then we followed him into what we assumed was his house. He was speaking to the other men in German. They were laughing loudly and seemed to be joking with one another, occasionally saying a word or two towards us as we stood awkwardly just inside the doorway. I glanced around the room. There wasn't much there, a set of weights up on one side of the room, a coffee table, a small couch, a TV, a computer chair. There was a smaller room next to us, which was piled high with kids' toys and clothes, all of them brand new. There were no decorations on the walls or anything symbolizing a long-term stay. The house itself was clean and modern, obviously a new construction. Wilson and the Germans had gathered around the exercise equipment and were demonstrating their strength to one another amid laughter. After Wilson had proven his manliness in an impressive feat of lifting the entire rack of weights, they all laughed and yelled some more. Wilson walked over and pulled a small wooden box out from underneath the coffee table. He lifted a small bag of something white out of the box and handed it to one of the Germans, who in turn passed Wilson a thick wad of folded euro bills. They shook hands and the Germans waved at us as they walked out the door to leave. It finally clicked. I make euro. Wilson was a drug dealer. Corey, Aaron, and I looked at each other as he closed the door behind the Germans. He turned back around with a big smile. The dude had not stopped smiling from the moment he picked us up. Okay, dinner. Ready for dinner? Aaron spoke up. Whatever, man. We'll eat anything. Pasta? Spaghetti? All good? Sure, Aaron replied. I can cook it. You don't have to worry about that. Okay. You cook, and you can douche if you like. He showed us the bathroom and laid out some towels. The fact that Wilson was a drug dealer was at this moment pushed to the backs of all of our minds. We were indescribably tired, dirty, and hungry. At the time, the offer of a shower and a meal was too great a distraction to worry about much else. After showers and a big meal of spaghetti, Wilson and I engaged in a friendly game of chess. The boys shared a joint with them, and then another customer arrived. This time it was a big Italian-speaking man named Alejandro. He played some fingerstyle guitar for us, exceptionally well, I might add. He also spoke English. Alejandro imparted some simple yet thought-provoking wisdom on us, which I found interesting enough to write down in my journal. Life is funny, man. Sometimes you have the money, but you're not happy. Sometimes you're happy, but you not have the money. You ever have both, you a lucky motherfucker, eh? After Alejandro had finished a deal with Wilson and shared a few laughs with us, he left just as the German guys had done before him. Wilson closed the door behind him and turned around towards us. Okay, we go town and drink cervezas. You meet mis amigos. We all looked at one another. I could tell the other two were feeling the same way I was. Man, we're just too tired. I think maybe we'll go find a place to camp for the night. No. Está bien. I leave and you sleep in my bed. I come back mañana, 10. Come back 10 mañana. We looked at each other again. A guy that we had just met only 3 hours earlier was going to leave us in his house alone all night while he went out? A guy that has barely even been able to talk to us and doesn't know the first thing about us? Man, we can't do that, I answered back. We just wouldn't feel right. Si, you stay. All good. He handed us a key. You sleep bien? I see you mañana. With that, he locked the door and left. It didn't take long for us to convince Aaron not to head outside and find a spot to camp, so he ended up on the couch while Corey and I settled down in Wilson's bed. It was without a doubt the best night's sleep of the trip thus far. The next morning, as we sat around the coffee table smoking our morning cigarettes, we took the first realistic look at our situation. There was not much furniture in the house. There were grocery bags completely full of marijuana clippings in the kitchen. It seemed like he was mostly just selling pot, but the Germans had bought either coke or ecstasy, I figured. We had no idea if anyone else lived there. The full weight of the situation hit us, and Aaron and I started to become a little anxious. What if this is just a drug house? I mean, maybe he doesn't even stay here. That would explain why he had no problem staying out all night, Aaron thought out loud. Yeah, and what if the cops just come and bust this place right now? I mean, he isn't here, and there's no way they're going to believe our story. We'd be fucked, I agreed. Guys, nothing like that is going to happen. He's a cool dude. Just relax. Corey being the endless optimist, as usual. I'm just saying, we don't know shit about this dude. There's a huge pile of clothes and toys in that other room, and all the shit is just brand new. That's just weird. The conversation went on and on for some time, Aaron and I both becoming more worried and Corey remaining willfully oblivious to any possible danger. Noon rolled around and Wilson had still not returned. I think we should just leave, Aaron suggested. Just pack up our shit and walk to the highway. It was a long walk, but I agreed with Aaron. I had a nagging feeling in the back of my mind that maybe this man wasn't who he seemed, that maybe he was planning to take advantage of us in some way. He had seen all of our electronic equipment and other expensive gear, after all. Or again, what if the cops came? With every minute that passed, we were more consumed by our paranoia. Why was he being so nice and overly friendly? Was it some kind of ploy? We needed to get out of there. Corey still disagreed with Aaron and me, but it was two against one yet again. We gathered up all of our gear. Then we realized we had yet another problem. Where's the food? Corey asked, looking around. Aaron looked up from his packing. Oh, fuck. I left it in his car yesterday. The stove fuel's in there, too. Jesus, what the hell can we do now? I said, frustrated. We're never going to be able to find more fuel around here. Not to mention how much it would cost. We just dropped like 40 euro on all that food. We didn't have a choice. We had to wait for Wilson to return. Two large canisters of stove fuel were in those bags. They had been expensive and hard to come by in Europe so far. So we sat and waited. I started to teach Corey and Aaron how to play chess. I played guitar. We wrote in our journals. Finally, around 3 p.m, the door opened and Wilson strolled in. Amigos! You sleep bien, eh? All good? He said, tossing his keys on the coffee table and sitting with us. We could do nothing but smile and conceal our fears. Yeah, man, slept great. I wasn't lying about that part, at least. All right, what do we do now? He asked with his trademark smile. If we could just get a ride to the highway so we can start traveling. I made a thumbs-up motion of hitchhiking, and he nodded his head that he understood. Bien, bien. First, eat. Mi amigo un ristorante, café. Then to road. All good? All right, that works, man, Corey answered enthusiastically. Aaron and I looked at one another with concern. Again, we didn't have much of a choice. Wilson motioned for us to follow him to the kitchen. He started pulling things out of cabinets and handing them to us, saying, "Take, take." Rice, chocolate, granola bars, tuna, even cilantro sent back from home in the Dominican Republic. He wouldn't stop. He even gave us the little portable chess set. Corey looked back at us as if to say, "See, what are you guys worried about?" I did feel better about Wilson now. I was still having trouble that someone could be so genuinely nice. It just didn't seem to add up. And I still didn't feel any better about hanging out in a drug house. He gave us a bag to put the food in, and we shouldered our packs, ready to head outside. I stopped for a moment and looked back at Corey and then Aaron in worried confusion. There was now a different car parked in front of the house. Wilson walked up and opened the back hatch. I gestured to Wilson. Car? I wasn't sure how to ask what I wanted to. Where's the car from yesterday? Wilson looked at the car, back at me, and then smiled. Ah, I bought her from a friend. This different friend. All good? But what about our food? We had bags in the back of the other car with our food in it, Aaron said as he made charades with his hands to help cross the language barrier. Food? In other car? Wilson asked. Yeah, in the car from yesterday. Did you get the bags out of the back? He waved his hand in dismissal. Is gone. No. It can't be gone. We have our fuel for our stove in there. Is gone. All good. No. Not all good. You borrowed your car from a friend, right? Can we just go get the bags from the car? No, it's gone. It's gone. No worries. I buy you more. You're not going to be able to find that stove fuel, I spoke up, making a motion with my hands as if to cook food. We find. I buy you more. Come, friends. Nos vamos. We looked at each other, bewildered. This was not good. We got into the car, this time with Aaron in the front and Corey and me in the back. After several back roads, we entered what looked like a little town, and Wilson pulled up in front of a grocery store. I go for fuel, he said as he exited the car. Several minutes later, he returned empty-handed, just as we expected, and we sped off again. This time, we pulled in front of a larger store, but Wilson didn't get out right away. Instead, he pulled out his phone and made a call to someone, speaking in German. He rolled the window down and yelled out of it at another car, smiling. Then he turned to face us. I meet friends real quick. All good? He walked over to the other car, a brand new Maserati, and smoked to two very large-looking men in sunglasses and suits. They looked like something right out of a mafia movie. They stared across at us, sitting in Wilson's newly borrowed car, and sternly pointed in our direction. My heart palpitated at the thought of being gunned down in a drug deal gone wrong. Wilson waved his hand in dismissal of us, probably telling them all good or something. They reached into the back of the Maserati and handed Wilson two grocery bags stuffed to the brim. After a quick handshake and a signature grin, he came back over to our car and threw open the back hatch. He swung the bags in, and I quickly smelled pot. We pulled back onto the road once again, this time for a very short amount of time, before stopping in front of a gas station. Wilson went inside and then came back out a moment later, handing each of us an iced coffee and a small cigar. Back onto the road we went. This still all seemed a bit weird to me. Not even considering the drug stop with the quote-unquote hitmen, I was starting to get increasingly worried. We were driving all over the place with two huge bags of weed in the back of the car, making all these strange and unannounced stops. Was he ever going to drop us off so we could get moving? My mind started to wander towards the worst-case scenarios. Wilson pulling into a secluded area where he had friends waiting to steal all of our gear and rob us of our traveling funds. Perhaps all the nice gestures were just to gain our trust. What if we got pulled over? Were the Swiss cool about weed, or would we be thrown in the nearest jail? I finally had signal on my cell phone and decided I should contact someone and let them know what was happening. I didn't want to message my mother, knowing she would have a panic attack if I told her what was going on. Instead, I decided to message Corey's brother, Cody, who, if you remember, was renting my house at the time. "Hey, bro. I don't want to worry my parents, but if anything happens, we're in Solothurn, Switzerland, and on our way to Biel. We're in kind of a sketchy situation. We're with a guy from the Dominican Republic named Wilson. If you don't hear from me tomorrow, tell my parents we're in trouble and we need them to call the embassy. I'll explain more when I can. Much love from your three idiot friends overseas." I also included the license plate number of the car we were in. Just as I hit send, we pulled up in front of an apartment complex. "I go inside and back soon. All good?" Without waiting for an answer, Wilson hopped out of the car, grabbed the two bags from the back, and headed inside. I waited till he was out of sight before I spoke up. "Okay, seriously, what is going on? Is this guy ever going to drop us off?" "You guys need to quit freaking out," Corey interjected. "He's just a cool motherfucker. Nothing bad is going to happen. You're overthinking it." Aaron agreed with me. "Dude, I mean, what happens if we get pulled over?" Aaron and I just wanted to be out of this strangely unnerving situation. Maybe we were overthinking it, but it just wasn't a particularly comfortable position to be in. Corey didn't see any danger involved, or if he did, he didn't show it. Wilson walked back out of the apartment complex holding two different bags. Our food bags. "I get back from mi amigo." "Oh, thank you. But, we do need to get a move on to go. Vamos." "Okay, okay. I take you to the lake. There you can sleep and ride mañana." "All good, all good." "Sure, that sounds good." Anything to get us out of the situation we're currently in, I thought. We left the town and went down several winding country roads. Wilson would stop the car every so often and motion for us to get out and take pictures of the landscape. Before we made it back to the lake, Wilson took us to a restaurant in the larger city of Biel or Bien. This was apparently the one his friend owned, because a Middle Eastern man came out to greet him the second we arrived, and they shook hands with a big mutual smile. "Tres cervezas por mis amigos," Wilson gestured towards us. "No problemo, brada." The man smiled again as he walked towards the bar and returned a few moments later with three large glasses of beer. We all showed our gratitude. Our anxieties finally lessened as we enjoyed the cold drinks. Wilson disappeared with the man into the restaurant while we sat out on the patio. He was playing around on some hand drums for a while, joking around with the staff and intermittently reappearing outside to check on us. While Wilson played the drums and conversed with the staff, the owner came out and talked to us in English for a few minutes. We told him how kind and generous had been to us and how it was all so unexpected. "That is just the way Wilson is. He's always give, 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 never take. He even buys toys and gives them to the local children whose parents have no money. He's a good man." I remembered the large pile of brand new toys in the spare room. Suddenly there were sandwiches placed in front of us. "You eat!" Wilson smiled as he sat down with a sandwich of his own. It was a delicious meal, some type of toasted wheat bread with tomato, ham, and cheese dressed with a vinaigrette. "What kind of sandwich is this?" Aaron asked. "Hmm?" Wilson didn't seem to understand the question. "What is this called, the sandwich?" It's just sandwich. Dominican Republic sandwich. Fair enough, I guess. We finished our meals and drained our beers. Wilson offered us another round, but we all declined. Okay, we go to lake now? We said goodbye to the enthusiastic earner and then shouldered our packs and took off down the sidewalk, Wilson guiding the way. This city was more modern-looking than most of the other places we had traveled through thus far. You could tell most of the buildings were new in comparison to the quaint look of the typical European villages we had seen. We wandered through the alleyways, past rows of shops alongside the many other people who were out enjoying the beautiful sunny day. After a short while, we rounded a bend and came upon a large glistening lake. We walked to its shoreline and sat on a concrete bench near a bunch of people barbecuing food. We rested there with Wilson for a while, and Corey and I played a couple of songs for him. Finally, Wilson stood up. Okay, it is time I go now. I work mañana, pero I come back, give you a ride after? No, man, you've done more than enough. We'll be fine, Corey answered apologetically. Okay, okay. I give you money then, dinero, to help you with the travel. He reached for his wallet. No, no, we don't want any money. Seriously, Wilson, you've done enough. You're a good man. Corey answered again as Aaron and I stood there, just flabbergasted. Okay, okay. Just a little money? No, no, no. How about you get a picture with us, Aaron offered. Ah, yes. Aaron set up the tripod and we all gathered with this ridiculously kind stranger for a photo. I held up the cardboard sign we had been holding when he had picked us up in Mantra. Afterwards, he gave us all a hug, told us adios, and he was gone. We sat in silence for a moment and watched as he rounded the bend up towards the city. No one said a word for a few moments until I finally spoke up. Okay, was that guy seriously just that nice? Because that's unbelievable. I told you guys it was no big deal, Corey commented with a grin. I mean, I'll give you that, but goddamn, I just couldn't believe there could be someone who's that genuinely nice to complete strangers. It's just insane. Aaron was on the same page as I was, but we had to give it to Corey on this one. His instincts had been right all along. Even now, I look back on that moment in amazement. The moment I first realized just how good-natured the human race can be. It was then that I started to realize that I needed to trust people a little more. I needed to be a little more open to the travel lifestyle. I thought I was pretty open-minded already, but this experience had proven me wrong. It would be the first of many such experiences, which would forever change my view of Earth's inhabitants. End of chapter 8. Chapter 9. Juancho versus the Nazi of Freiburg. Freiburg, Germany. When preparing to travel, lay out all your clothes and all your money. Then take half the clothes and twice the money. Susan Heller. July 15th. Aaron and I had begun to argue frequently. I find it pertinent here, despite the risk of redundancy, to fully explain our financial arrangements prior to leaving. It had been decided and agreed upon as a group before leaving to pool all of our money together as one. This wasn't a vacation or a small month-long trip somewhere. This, we knew, would consist of survival. It had been clear from the very beginning that Aaron would contribute more money at the start. He had a full-time job, lived with his parents, and had no bills to pay. I, on the other hand, lived alone and had a truck payment to make on top of my housing costs. Corey worked some odd jobs, sold quite a few possessions, and any tips we made playing shows were put towards the trip as well. My plan had been to make money from the website, which is why I had put in countless agonizing hours on that fickle son of a bitch before we left. I had also planned to make money by playing music, along with Corey, of course. So with that being said, it was surprising to both Corey and me that a week or so into the trip, Aaron had suddenly started to act as if all the money was his to control. It began to feel like we needed permission to buy even a little bit of food. He complained incessantly about it. He wished to forgo any comforts imaginable to save even the most dismal portion of funds. I was all for saving money too, but at the same time I wanted to enjoy the trip. More importantly, I knew that this extreme budgeting was ironically preventing me from the chance of actually making money. If we never had Wi-Fi, I'd never be able to get the website to its full potential. If we were too tired from sleeping in random places and hiking all day, we'd never have the energy to play music. And so the vicious cycle continued. All this reached an apex of sorts after Wilson had left us. We were camping on a mountainside near Lake Beale when I once again brought up my idea of staying somewhere for a few days. That way we could work on the website and contact couchsurfing hosts. "Yeah, but what if we spend all that money and then the website doesn't make anything?" he asked. "We've already gotten donations. We know it can make money. The difference is if we don't even try, then we'll be doing nothing but spending with no chance at recouping any costs. Plus, what about couchsurfing?" "I just don't see us making any money from the website. And what city would we even try to find a host at for couchsurfing?" "Well, if we had Wi-Fi, we could research that. I ain't spending any more money on hostels, so that's out of the question." I looked up at Corey, who was staring at the ground in silence. And then back to Aaron. "Dude, how is that up to you? We're all in this together. It's not a one-man show," I demanded. "Well, I'm tired of you guys trying to tell me how to spend my money. I broke my back to make this money. I earned it." I was momentarily taken aback by this statement. First of all the money didn't come from you. And we all agreed to pool our money together anyway. So now that's not what we're doing?" Corey finally butted in as well. "Yeah, man. We all agreed months ago that we'd pull our money together as a group." "Well, that was before I saw how much money we're spending. If I let you guys buy whatever you want, we'll be broke in a week," Aaron replied angrily. "I'm not trying to go out and spend all our money, Aaron. I just want the chance to be able to make some money and hopefully enjoy this trip as much as we can. You're making me feel like some kind of piece of shit right now, like I'm bumming money off you or something." I was starting to get upset. "I just wish we would have had the same amount of money to bring from the beginning." "Well, I was busy planning this trip for us and busting my ass on the website while you did the same thing you do every day. You didn't break your back working any different than you always did, trip or no trip." It went on and on like that for a while. Corey didn't speak up much. He always tended to try to be the middleman between us. Eventually, we both gave up and just decided to go to sleep. I lay in my hammock, still very pissed off, and wondered what the rest of this trip was going to be like. It was becoming very clear that Aaron and I were two totally different personality types. I just hoped we could learn to live with each other. The next day, we packed up and went back to hitchhiking, soon ending up in Freiburg, Germany. We stopped there because it was the closest town on the route to Heidelberg, where we were planning on staying with a friend of Dennis, the German guy who had given us hitchhiking tips. An older woman had picked us up in Switzerland who spoke literally not one word of English. She had called her daughter, who did speak our language, and had put her on speakerphone in the car to translate. She was nice enough to drive us almost 3 hours, across the German border and all the way to Freiburg. She had only been going 20 minutes down the road before she picked us up. She refused any money for gas. The longer we hitchhiked, the more my faith in humanity continued to grow. When we arrived in Freiburg, we headed to a McDonald's for some free Wi-Fi, and I looked up nearby places to stay. There was a relatively cheap hotel right next to where we were sitting. I brought it up to Aaron, waiting for him to blow up on me. We argued about the price for a while, and finally he agreed, followed by, "Want to pay for this one with your card?" I had mine and Corey's money in my bank account, totaling around $500 to $600 still available at that point. When we had put our money in, Aaron said he didn't want to put any in the bank and opted to carry it all in a money belt instead. I hadn't thought anything of it at the time, other than the fact that it was a dumb idea, in my opinion, to carry around thousands of dollars in cash while we hitchhiked. "Sure, that's fine," I answered. "Why don't you guys go check in and I'll see if I can make some money busking real quick." "Sounds good." I had them both set their bags next to me as I set up near the sidewalk. I tuned up my guitar and started to play and sing. I had been playing a few moments when I saw a couple of police officers walking towards me. "Ah, great." "Yeah, man, rock and roll," one of them exclaimed, playing air guitar as he walked by with a big grin on his face. "Sweet. Well, the cops are cool at least." I continued to play. A pretty young blonde walked in front of me, smiling seductively. "Nah, no way." I thought I surely had to be imagining things. She turned around and walked back. I smiled back at her, and this time she waved. "Okay, Interesting. Another girl walked from across the street, and this time the blonde girl kept walking. Just as I finished the song I was playing, the second girl approached me. Hello, she said with a smile and a thick German accent. Hi there. Where are you from? The U.S. Ah, I love American music. It's great, yeah? You're very good. Awesome, and thank you very much. Would you like some food? Okay. She placed a croissant in my guitar case along with some coins as I started to play another song. She stood there listening as people passed by, many of them dropping coins in the case along the way. Two more girls approached from behind where I was playing and sat Indian style against a flower bed to my right. I looked over and they smiled. I finished the second song and they spoke to me. You are American, no? Yes, American. Ah, is good. You know Jack Johnson? Yeah, I love Jack. I listed a few of his tunes I liked to cover and began to play one. More tips went in the guitar case. Just then Aaron walked out. He stopped for a moment and then smiled. I was surrounded by beautiful women. I was probably more astonished than he was. I finished the song and Aaron walked the rest of the way over to me. What the hell is going on? He asked with a grin. I have no idea, dude. They love the music, I guess. Well, I'm going to take the bags to the room. I'll send Corey down to sneak you in. We had to get a room just for two again. Whatever. Cool. I was not even remotely interested in the hotel at that moment. I looked over at the two girls sitting to my right. You know, normally I play for tips, but in your case I'll take a phone number. They giggled and looked at each other. Oh, yeah? One of them smiled. And what will you do with my phone number? I'll be in town for a few days. Maybe we could go out for a drink or something. I imagined in my head Aaron telling me, no, we can't spend money on that. After which I would just casually roundhouse him in the face on my way out the door. I would only be in town tonight, but we can meet you later if you want, she answered. Yeah, it's cool with me. I got her phone number and then went back to playing. The tips kept rolling in, to my astonishment, and I was on cloud nine. Eventually, Corey came to get me, and I called it a day. Once we got to the room, I opened the guitar case and counted out 15 euros, which is about $20 US. I'd only been playing about 30 minutes. That may not sound like much, but given our extreme budgeting at the time, it was a fairly sizable amount. I was very excited that it seemed like the German youth, girls and guys both included, were into acoustic music. I could tell I was really going to like this country. I ended up video chatting with my family back home most of the evening, rather than calling the girl from earlier, as that would have required me to find a cell phone store and get a German SIM card. I was more excited just to have a shower and a bed. Sometimes, when you're a poor vagabond, it's more about the chase, I guess. The following day, we booked a hostel farther into the city for two nights. Again, I was surprised when Aaron didn't argue against it. A tram took us there with only a brief moment of being lost and confused. Our navigation skills seemed to be slowly improving. And I even found a cell phone store right next to the tram stop, where I was able to reactivate my cell phone so we could use the data for Google Maps. We entered the guest house and were greeted at the front desk by a friendly old man. After we had checked in and been given the rundown of rules and regulations, we were led to a four-bed dorm, which would be our room for the next two nights. You have one more person in here, he told us as he handed us a key. We settled into the room and cooked a dinner of rice and tuna on the balcony. I had more rice and tuna during the next few months than the average person probably eats in a lifetime. We were smoking cigarettes after our meal when the door to our room opened and in walked a younger, Spanish-looking man with short, neat hair and a dark blue t-shirt that was too large for him. Hey, guys, he said with a smile as he extended a hand. I am Juancho. We introduced ourselves in turn and asked where Juancho was from. I am from Canary Islands, is near Spain, and you guys are American? Is it that obvious? I noticed a guitar in the corner. You play? Ah, yes, man, I love to play. You as well? Yeah, man, we should jam sometime. I spent the first day working on the website while Corey talked to his girlfriend on Facebook and Aaron worked on some photography stuff. During the day, I took a tram into town by myself to busk and once again made a decent little bit of money. We went out for a couple beers with Juancho that night, and he and I played guitar on the street. He was pretty good at following what I was playing, and we had a great time. There was an older lady working at the hostel as well, who seemed from the beginning of our stay to be rather unfriendly. First, she yelled at me for sitting on the lawn furniture on the balcony for some reason, and then scolded me for playing the piano while guests could possibly be trying to sleep at 3 in the afternoon. But I digress. The next night it was decided that we would take the tram downtown and do some real drinking with our new friend. We all loved Juancho. He was an exceptionally friendly guy. Once downtown, we entered a small hole-in-the-wall bar to get some beers to go. I approached the counter and asked the woman to, quote, give me the shittiest, cheapest beer you have. So she handed me a bottle and I took a drink. It was delicious. You have to be kidding me. Germany is fucking awesome. We got a few beers apiece and stuffed them into our pockets. Afterwards, we gathered around a bench along one side of the cobblestone street. Juancho and I started to play some tunes while Corey kept time with the shakers. We were dancing around, smiling and laughing as we followed each other along to songs. Before long, a large group of people wandered around us to listen. This particular street was frequented only by bicycles, so most of the crowd gathered right in the middle. We jumped up on the bench and continued to play as the growing crowd started to clap along. We finished the song with a dramatic display of jumping up and down and were met with a large round of applause afterwards. We laughed and hugged and then jumped down from the bench. A group of younger kids walked up to us. "You guys must come with us to a big party," they demanded. "Where at?" Corey asked. "Right down the street. You walk with us?" another of them answered. "All right." We followed them down the cobblestone street and off into an alley, surrounded on both sides by the characteristic old stone buildings of Freiburg. It was an undeniably beautiful city and undoubtedly rich with history. The end of the alley opened up to a large open forum, filled with what looked to be hundreds of young kids all sitting on the street. They were all speaking quietly, but the sheer number of them still made it a somewhat noisy area. It was kind of weird, actually, as if we were listening to a massive whisper. The group of kids that brought us there quickly melted into the crowd, and we sat down on the edge of the gathering. I got out my guitar and started to play when a teenager sitting next to us interrupted me. "You cannot play that here. They will arrest you."
"Arrest me?"
"We are allowed to gather here, but after 9 p.m. there is no loud noise allowed."
"Fuck that."
I started to play anyways. I hadn't even got through the first song when I was literally kicked in the shoulder. I saw Corey, Aaron, and Juancho all looking behind me with widened eyes.
"You! Passport now!"
"Huh?" I turned around to see 3 police officers in tactical vests standing behind me.
"Passport now!"
the officer demanded of me once again. "Okay, okay, hold on." I reached into my pocket, fumbling for the little book.
"You cannot do this here. It is not allowed. If I like, I can arrest you and take your guitar."
"Listen, I'm sorry," I said with an innocent face as I handed him my passport. "I didn't know," I lied. Another of the officers, a young woman with blonde hair and a tight bun, snatched my guitar out of my hands.
"Whoa!"
I yelled in protest as I began to stand up.
"Sit!"
The first cop pushed me back onto the ground.
"You understand we can arrest you right now if we choose."
"Listen, listen, I'm really sorry," I pleaded. "It won't happen again, I promise. I don't want to go to jail." He looked back at the other officer holding my guitar and then back towards me.
"I will let you go with the warning this time, since I do not think you knew about the rule. But if I catch you again, you will go to jail."
"Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it." Kissing ass. They handed me my guitar and walked away again. I can be arrested for playing music? What is this, the town from Footloose?
You guys want to go somewhere else?" Juancho asked.
The mood here was obviously ruined.
"Yeah, fuck this,"
Corey said aloud as we all stood up to leave. We walked back down the alley from which we had arrived until we noticed a door to a small bar down some steps. We heard loud music coming from inside. Here we go. I walked in behind the others and we all grabbed a seat at the bar. The source of the loud music was karaoke, which was happening up on the little stage at the end of a long, narrow tavern. We ordered drinks. I got my beer and walked up to the sign-in sheet when I was accosted by an overly intoxicated young guy.
"Are you singing, man?"
He was British.
Yeah, sure. Let's do one together, yeah?
His shaggy blonde hair fell to one side as he slurred out the request.
All right, what song?
Fuck, man. The Beatles.
Are you really going to be a stereotypical British guy right now?
Hey, fuck you, mate.
Relax, man. I like the Beatles. I'm just giving you shit.
That sounds good.
I sang with the drunken British man and then finished my beer. I ordered another and then headed outside for a smoke. I had been carrying my guitar on my back this whole time, and as I walked up the stairs, another young guy noticed it.
You play a song for us?
Sure, man. I was feeling pretty good at this point. I took the guitar out of its case and played a song to the guy and his friends, another guy and three girls, one of whom was really catching my eye. They enjoyed the music and were asking for another song when Juancho, Corey, and Aaron emerged from the bar. Hey guys, these are my new friends. I introduced the German group for whom I had just played. The boys lit up a smoke and sipped their beers while I played another song. After I finished, one of the girls spoke up.
We are going to a dance club. You guys want to come with us?
I looked at Corey, Aaron, and Juancho.
The tram quits running in like 15 minutes, Corey reminded us.
Yeah, that's a pretty long way back to walk, I agreed. But I mean, it's not like we have our packs or anything.
I will do whatever you guys want to do, Juancho chimed in with a smile.
Yeah, whatever, Aaron commented. I looked at Corey and we both nodded our heads.
Fuck it.
We followed the young Germans down the alley and back onto the same cobblestone street from earlier, then down yet another alleyway on the other side. This one led to a small door where a man stood checking IDs. We handed him our passports and then entered a long hallway which assumedly led to the club. One of the girls called back as we walked.
In this club, they play only 90s and 2000s music.
I can dig that.
What?
Cool. We entered the club, which reminded me of the small town roller skating rinks from my childhood, except with alcohol. It was a circular shape with one end housing a bar and the other a DJ. Smash Mouth's Walking on the Sun was blaring as young Germans danced and drank. Aaron grabbed beers and brought them to us.
Where's Quincho?
You mean Juancho? Corey bursted out laughing.
Queso.
He was behind me when I gave the door guy my passport, I recalled. I looked around but didn't see him anywhere. Aaron shrugged. I'm sure he'll be in.
Taco.
Corey was still laughing at the name mix-up. We walked up to our new friends who were already dancing. Corey and I stopped for a moment and then looked at each other with raised eyebrows. These kids couldn't dance with a good goddamn. It was terrible. It was like watching Rock'em Sock'em Robots try to drunkenly gangbang a ballerina. They were lifting their arms up like they were skiing, not joking about the Rock'em Sock'em Robots reference, and swaying back and forth like balloons tied to a mailbox. Their feet were erratically flopping about on the floor. It was like watching your parents try to dance to dubstep. Just so awkward and strange. 50 Cent's Into Club came on. I sat down the guitar and started fist pumping. Corey slid onto the floor as well and started laying down some serious moves. This was our shit. Well, it was when we were in high school. I started doing the lawnmower, where you pretend to be starting a pushmower with the pull chain. Corey busted out the shopping cart move. Even aside from the jokingly stupid dance moves, we were really getting down. Let me pause to say that I'm not really that good of a dancer, if that isn't blatantly obvious already. I have rhythm, but all my moves are painfully white boyish. That being said, the people in that club made me look like Justin fucking Timberlake. I felt like a god. Corey, who is actually a really good dancer, was a god to these people. At one point, while we were both getting down on the Get Down to How Bizarre by OMC, one of the German guys came up to him and said, and I quote verbatim, "You are the coolest motherfucker in this club right now, bro." After over an hour of dancing our asses off, we decided to call it a night. I wasn't sure how, but Corey and I somehow convinced Aaron to let us get a taxi back to the guest house rather than walk. When we arrived there, we entered our room to find that Juancho was still nowhere to be found.
"Where the hell's Quesadilla?" Corey asked drunkenly.
I couldn't stop laughing. I hope Casa del Taco is all right. We were genuinely concerned about Juancho, but there wasn't really much we could do. We stood out on the balcony and smoked a cigarette before heading to bed.
We had no sooner shut off all the lights when Juancho opened the door and walked in. "Hey!" we all yelled at the same time. "Dude, what happened?" Aaron asked. He was sweating profusely. "Oh, man. When we get to the club, I think, hey, man, this is not the place for Juancho. So I decide I want to walk back to here. Man, it took forever. I thought I would never make it back. At one point, I saw a child's bicycle, and I think to myself, hey, Juancho, you could take this bike and ride it back. No one will ever know. But I cannot do this. I would be big, how you say, dickhead? So I keep walking instead, and here I am." The next morning, we woke to find Juancho gone again. He was staying there while he searched for an apartment, so we assumed he was out early looking for one. We were gathering up our gear to leave when the door swung open without warning. The older woman I mentioned earlier was standing there. "You must leave in 10 minutes for checkout, and I need your key now." "Tom, do you have the key?" Aaron asked. "No, man. I set it on the table when we got back last night. Maybe Juancho took it or something," I said, noticing it was not where I had set it the night before. "The other person has already given me his key," the woman replied dryly. "You must find the key now." "Okay, we're working on it." I started sorting through stuff on the little table while Corey and Aaron searched their pockets, just in case. "You must have the key for me now," the woman demanded, her hands on her hips. I was hungover and not in the mood. "We're looking for it. Isn't that obvious? I give you 10 minutes. Bye now." We searched everywhere for that fucking key, but we could not find it. We emptied out all of our packs, searched every pocket of every piece of clothing we had, looked under all the furniture, and even searched the bathroom. Nothing. I went to the front desk and approached the woman. "Listen, we cannot find this key. I have no idea where it's at." "You must find the key." "I don't think you understand. We've looked everywhere for the thing. We just don't have it." "This is not my problem. You will not leave the building until you bring me the room key." "I'm not a wizard. I can't wave my fucking dick in a circle like a wand and conjure the thing up." Her eyes widened as she tilted her head back in disgust. "If you cannot find the key, you will be charged 4,000 euro for it. Since it is used to unlock the main door downstairs, we would have to replace all of the keys for the entire building." "That's a goddamn stupid joke, right?" Whoa, what?" Aaron jumped in from behind me. "Yes, you must pay 4,000 euro if you do not find the key." "That isn't happening, lady." I was becoming furious. "I'll look again, but we've checked everywhere." Just about that time, Juancho arrived back. "Hey, man, do you happen to have our key?" Corey asked him. "No, I give my key back to the woman this morning." "Ah, fuck. There's no way we have this thing," I thought out loud. We looked some more. The woman kept coming out and threatening us with calling the police, etc. Finally, I told her, go ahead. There was nothing else we could do. We just didn't have the key. She huffed and left the room and then came back in with a sheet of paper. She handed it to me. "You pay this now or I call the police." I looked at the paper. She was charging us 75 euro to replace one key. There are two things I want to call bullshit on here. One, obviously she doesn't really have to replace all the goddamn keys in the building. Two, 75 euro for a key copy? That's almost 100 US dollars for something that costs around $1 at your local Walmart. We paid it. In retrospect, I don't really know why. We should have just left. I was livid. We all were, except Juancho, jolly and smiling as always. "It's okay, man, it's okay," he consoled. "You will find that money somehow later in your trip, guys. I feel this." Such a positive individual. Even Corey was furious about this one. Juancho bought us each a morning beer and a croissant before we parted ways. We had a hug and took a picture together. It was raining lightly, and we were about to walk down a busy highway to make it to an on-ramp I had spotted on Google Maps. We all really admired him, although I don't think I heard Aaron pronounce his name correctly even once. Juancho. Regrettably, Juancho was one of the few people from our journey that I didn't connect with on social media. I don't even know why. We sat for many hours during the day on computers across from each other, me working on the website and him looking for apartments. I'll probably never hear or see that guy ever again, and I have to say he was one of the coolest people we met on our trip. If you're out there, brother,
I hope you're doing well. As mentioned before, I had been contacted by one of the German guys, Dennis, who we had met all the way back in our second hostel in Barcelona, Spain. He said he had a friend in Heidelberg who we could crash with for a while.